Inspector West.
Stand by for West. A crime file based on John Creasy's novel, Battle for Inspector West. Dramatized for radio by Maurice Travers. Battle for Inspector West, starring Patrick Allen as Chief Inspector Roger West of Scotland Yard and Sarah Lawson as his wife Janet. Part 1. Honeymoon Spells Nightmare.
John Creasy was quite simply a phenomenon. Between 1932 and his death in 1973, he wrote some 562 books, which were to sell over 80 million copies worldwide in 28 different languages. So prolific was he that in addition to publishing under his own name, he wrote under a variety of pseudonyms: Patrick Dawlish, Anthony Morton, Michael Halliday, J.J. Marrick, and many more. He wrote westerns as Tex Riley, romantic novels as Margaret Cook, but most famously, he wrote detective stories and thrillers. Among his most popular creations were The Toff, The Baron, Commander Gideon of Scotland Yard, and Chief Inspector Roger West.
Chief Inspector West. Oh, hello, Superintendent. Something I can do for you? Another way around. How do you mean, sir? Oh, yes? Who? Mm-hmm. What? And this was where? I see. Yes, sir, I'll come over right away. Thank you for letting me know. Goodbye. My God, Jim, this gets more peculiar by the minute.
Oh, I'll come.
And that was West End Central, Superintendent Kingsley. Now, just listen to this. They're holding Alf Slater. You know him, don't you?
Who doesn't? He's been nicked more times than I've had hot dinners. A petty thief since he was old enough to crawl.
Right. Well, one of their men put the collar on him in the Victoria Embankment Gardens.
Well, what for this time?
Stealing a woman's handbag. He'd still got it when the constable nicked him. But here's the point, Jim. It's Janet's handbag.
It's what?
Yes, everything in it. Wallet, keys, diary.
Is Mrs. West there too, then, at West End Central?
No. The constable looked for her in the gardens. He knows her by sight, apparently, but no trace. Right, you hold the fort here, Jim. I'm going over to get the full story.
In addition to his writing, Creasy found the time to set up the Crime Writers Association, to circle the globe twice, and to create his own political party, the All Party Alliance, for which he stood in 4 by-elections. Given all these calls upon his time, and his extraordinary rate of book production, how good a writer was he? His son, Richard Creasy.
I'm prejudiced. I would argue he was one of the great writers, one of the very, very great writers. Many, many people thought he wrote far too many books, and therefore they couldn't be good. Many of the people that said that hadn't read many books. In fact, most hadn't read any at all. And all those who'd only read a few books were surprised, and those who read books under his nom de plume were surprised. Having said that, he did have 740-odd rejections before a single book was accepted, so the first ones were not that good, and he did learn and learn and learn, and by the end, he became very good. Now, the way he did it was he wrote very fast. In everybody's view, far too fast. But he would put the books aside for a year and a half, and in that year and a half, he would send them to 5 professional readers. Then he would get the books back, and he would then put all of their comments into the books. And this happened for the last 200 or 300. And that was his writing method. So what he would do is he'd write in the mornings, and then revise books that had come back 18 months later, and put them out in the afternoons, and that was his working day.
John Creasy had a particular philosophy of writing.
Dad always reckoned that you'd read a book as you felt it, and he always reckoned they should be read and bought at the station in, say, Manchester. By the time you got to London, you'd finished a book, and he hoped you'd turn round and buy a book on the way from London to Manchester and buy a second John Creasy book. And they were written very much with that in mind. And as we look at them, they're written almost as television scripts or radio scripts. They're written very much with that feeling. And I think his greatest ability was twofold. One was as an extraordinary storyteller, and the second was as an amazing character writer. He wasn't fantastically good at the detail. If you look back at some of the Inspector Wests and some of his other series, you'll find lots of differences as they come along. People's hair colour will change. But remember, he only wrote 1 or 2 Inspector Wests every 18 months, and therefore it was something he had to get himself back into as he did it.
Creasy's own favourite among the many series he wrote was the one devoted to the exploits of Inspector West, which ran eventually to 43 titles. How did the series come about?
Inspector West started primarily because he was a tiny bit embarrassed by Grice in his Toff series. Grice was the policeman Toff series. And many policemen argued that he was being very unfair. And he took that to heart, went at length to Scotland Yard, and then decided to write a series based on a policeman. And that was his very first series, which was policeman-based.
Creasy fan Norman Wright is a great admirer of the Roger West books.
Well, in 1942, Creasy created Chief Inspector West of Scotland Yard, a character who was to become one of his own personal favourites. He first appeared in Inspector West Takes Charge, and here we meet the core characters who continue to appear throughout the series of some 40-plus books. West was a go-ahead career policeman, and within the first few pages of the novel, we're told he was the youngest Chief Inspector at Scotland Yard. He also had the good looks of a film star, and this earned him the nickname of Handsome West. I feel it never quite rings true when one of his colleagues says, "How's the case going, Handsome?" And I'm very pleased that when the stories were adapted for radio, West was never referred to as Handsome West. That first novel isn't a particularly good book, partly because Creasy hadn't fully developed the characters. West's wife, and later his family, played a fairly substantial role in the stories, and this gave them an extra dimension. In fact, Creasy gave West his own two sons, Martin and Richard, who grew up in real life as their counterparts grew up in the novels. And the family atmosphere gives the novels a feeling of much greater authenticity. Here's Roger West putting in a 12, sometimes 15 or more hour day on a case, and then going home shattered, but still having all the everyday family things to listen and attend to. And there are some nice touches in the books, with West going home and finding a drawing by one of his sons at the side of his armchair, or West listening to the boys telling him about some football or boxing match they've taken place in. And of course, Janet brings home to the reader the anxiety that every policeman's wife must feel when her husband's out on a dangerous case. And Creasy's wonderful at getting over to the reader the sheer hard work and exhaustion involved in police investigation.
Roger! Breakfast! Oh, Roger!
Coming!
This minute, please, I'm dishing up. Oh, Roger!
Oh, right, dear Jan. Oh, smells good.
Sit you down.
Yes, ma'am. Where are the boys? Hey, Scoopy, Fish.
No, they've already had breakfast. I let you sleep on a bit after the time you got home last night. Your sons are up in the playroom with that train set you gave them last Christmas. You may be Scotland Yard's youngest, smartest chief inspector, but that, if I may say so, Mr. West, was not one of your brighter notions.
We all make mistakes. I route the boys out, Jan. They'll be late.
Well, not if they can spin things out long enough so that Dad has to give them a lift in the car.
Oh, cunning young demons. Marvellous, isn't it? 11 and 10, and as crafty as they make them already.
Well, heredity, we're out. After all, they've a copper for their father. Ready for tea?
Anytime you like.
Here you are. I've sugared it for you.
Oh, thanks.
I wish you didn't have to work so hard.
Well, it's no worse for me than any other copper. The motto of the force these days, overworked and understaffed, but we go marching on.
Yes, but even so, you've no need to drive yourself quite so much, darling. If what you're after is to finish up being the Yard's youngest assistant commissioner as well, there's still lots of time, surely. Sir Guy Chatsworth can stay put in his office for a while yet, can't he?
As long as he likes. Oh, that's no job for me, Jan. I'm not cut out to be a desk-bound policeman. Anyone see in the pond?
Yes, of course. Yes, but all the same, it wouldn't hurt you to take an hour off once in a while. Today, at lunchtime, for instance. It just so happens that I'm going to be in the West End. There's an exhibition of American paintings at the Markham Galleries. And I think it would be nice if you took me out for lunch. Roger.
Hmm?
I don't believe you're even listening.
That's a date.
What?
For lunch.
Well, talk about a girl having the wind taken out of her sails. Here's I, all set for a battle.
Meet me outside St. Catherine's Church, 12 o'clock. After that, we'll go on to lunch.
Lovely.
And, of course, Creasy also used the family aspect of the novel to add tension when Janet or the boys are in danger or threatened by some particularly unsavoury villain.
Creasy, walking along the beach, that young woman with the dog. I've never seen such a huge animal. What is it?
Mastiff, by the look of it. Well, bigger than most of them.
Where are the boys?
Well, they're in the water a while ago.
I can't see them.
No, now, Jan. Look, don't start working.
Yeah, but you know how Richard is about dogs, especially big dogs. Oh, there they are. Martin! Richard! Come here! Fred, dog! Look, it's going for them. Oh, come on, Jan. Fred!
just knocked him down.
Rather he should have been getting fed like a big puppy.
Yes, okay.
Go on. I'll come with you, Jack.
Yes, ma'am.
Hey, Jack! Hmm? There's a letter for you here.
What?
On the bench. It says Chief Inspector and Mrs. Roger Wood.
Yes, all right, son. You take the sweater to your mother. What are you doing here?
Okay, Dad. Hey, Goldfish, you've got out of the shop by now.
Yes. What the hell? Down, rotten. That does it. That really does it. Well, Jan, all set, ready to go?
Yes. Now, do I get an explanation?
I told you we're going back to London.
Roger! You tell me to bring the boys back here to the hotel, leave me to do all the packing while you disappear.
All right. All right, John. Maybe it's best you should know. That young woman and the dog, it didn't just happen by chance.
What?
There was another letter. I found it in the beach hut. Brief and to the point. Small boys are easy game, aren't they?
Roger.
I've been to the local coppers. When that woman whistled off the dog, I saw them get into a car. There was a man driving. I've given a description of her, the dog, and the car. I've also called Bill Sloan at the yard.
I wish I never thought. It never entered my mind that it...
I'll get them, Jan, whoever they are. Every last mother, son, and daughter of them. I'll get them. I promise you that.
Famously, Richard Creasy and his brother Martin, with their real-life nicknames Fish and Scoop, were written into the books as the children of Roger and Janet West.
Well, I can tell you it's absolutely true. I can tell you that on occasions when we were playing outside and my brother Scoop, who was 363 days older than I was, so I was the same age as him for 2 days a year, which was extraordinarily good at that age, when he pushed and knocked me over and I grazed my knee and I got up and tried to hit him, he was much bigger than I was. This was then described exactly as it happened by my dad. Our nicknames were the names that we actually had. Fish and Scoop. The Scoop, my elder brother, was called that because my father was trying to get him to burp as a tiny baby and went oops, 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 and that became Scoop. And then when I was born and became Richard, he couldn't say Richard, he said Fishard, and I, of course, called him Soup, and that became Scoop. And so Fish and Scoop still lasts. And indeed, I wrote a note to my brother by email today and said, "Dear Scoop," and signed it Fish. So it's still used inside the family.
Both in the Gideon series and the Roger West books, John Creasy became one of the earliest masters of the police procedural novel. What was his attitude to the police? Richard Creasy.
Well, Dad, more than anything else, believed that the important thing about his books was that good won over evil. And he felt that very strongly. Indeed, when I was about 7, 8, I remember I asked my dad what God was. And my father said, "Well, if you spell it with 2 O's, you'll get it right." And everything I always heard was that Dad believed in good. And really, from that point of view, being on the side of the police was very important. It didn't mean to say he believed in everything they did. He was very critical of everybody, including himself. But he did believe that it was extremely important to have a police force, and he felt that all around the world. When I was 5 or 6, we did our first world trip, and that meant going to Southern Africa and to Australia and to America. And then when I was 18, we did our second world trip. And on all these occasions, I can vividly remember that in every single city we got to, Dad would go to the police station so he could learn more about it, learn more about them, and find out, most importantly, what they thought of his books, and take those criticisms on board and move forward from there.
Now, suppose we skip the patter and get down to the Inquisition or whatever.
Hardly an Inquisition. For occasions of that nature, I employ more drastic procedures, I assure you. No. Let us describe this as a discussion. And to begin it, I should like you to tell me what you think of me.
That's sticking your neck out, isn't it?
I should be interested to hear your opinion of me. You may be perfectly frank.
Corrosion, there just aren't enough words in the book for what I feel about you.
What you feel? Yes, that's your weakness, West. Your emotions. You have intelligence, perception, and courage. But for all that, you're a simple man who believes in the simple rules of right and wrong and the virtues of sympathy, kindness, compassion. All the immature values of an unnatural civilization.
Unnatural?
Certainly. Man is the product of nature. The laws of nature are simple too, of course, but completely different. The tiger doesn't concern himself with the rights and wrongs of his hunger. He merely satisfies it. The ivy has no sympathy for the tree which it strangles. It does so, and that is all. What do you find so amusing, Wes?
Corrosion cut out the eyewash. You can't justify yourself by some kind of cockeyed moral philosophy. You're just another villain, bigger than most, cleverer than most. Maybe that's what makes you more vicious than most, but just another crook, that's all.
So you have an opinion of me, after all.
That's right.
Francis DeWolfe as Corrosion and Patrick Allen as Roger West there. While Creasy's Commander Gideon reached the screen in a major 1958 feature film starring Jack Hawkins and a 1960s television series with John Gregson, Roger West achieved his dramatisation on radio. Between 1967 and 1971, the BBC produced six Inspector West serials under the generic title Stand By for West. The first two were directed by John Fawcett Wilson, and the remaining four by John Browell. I asked John Fawcett Wilson, how did the radio series originate?
I'd done a series with Maurice Travers, who did the dramatisation, with a friend of his, Tony Scott Veitch. Both came over from Australia, and they did this series called Overland Patrol for the All Night programme. Vernon Harris, who used to produce that, retired, and I was asked if I'd like to have a shot at doing some drama, which I said yes I would, nervously. And so I did this series, one series of this. Both of them wanted to work, do individual work apart from this series, and so therefore Morris and I had been talking. I think he's very interested in dramatisation, and we talked about, he said he'd like to do this series of Inspector West, did I know the Creasy novels, which I didn't. I read one or two, and I put it forward in the normal course of events for Light Programme. They said yes, please, and we went away. He commissioned and wrote the script, and we took it from there.
Maurice Travers scripted all six radio serials.
He's a great enthusiast, quite a theatrical personality, but a very enthusiastic worker. We used to have some sort of very hefty sessions in the office, because I was a beginner in drama production from that point of view. But we'd spend the normal 3 or 4 hours fighting and cursing and getting it right, you know. I didn't do all the West series. I did the first two. He went on, obviously, doing those. And then, in fact, he did a little bit of work generally, and then he joined World Service as a producer with them.
Patrick Allen and Sarah Lawson, husband and wife in real life, were cast in the roles of Roger West and his wife Janet. What qualities did they bring to the roles?
A lot of the detective series, I suppose it's the Agatha Christie, we've got the Miss Marples and the Hercule Poirot and the Peter Wimses, they all seem to me sort of very nice and sort of clean-cut guys, you know, and what have you. But I thought it would be nice. It's a Chief Inspector, Scotland Yard, a slightly more rugged personality, and I thought Patrick filled that particular bill, which he did wonderfully. Also, husband and wife. I don't know, it was just me. I thought it would be nice if we could cast Sarah as well, playing husband and wife on the air. I don't know how difficult this is, but in fact it worked very well. And I think that what they did is they sort of pulled it down to earth. And certainly the little domestic scenes had a nice sort of realism about them that you don't always get, or didn't then, anyway.
What attracted Patrick Allen and Sarah Lawson to the roles?
When I read it, I thought, well, this is going to be very nice because Patrick and I get on quite well together and we have worked together rather a lot. I thought, this is going to be fun, and the children are at home, and we just both finished a series. Patrick had done Crane and I had done a series called The Odd Man. And so we did it. And it was easy to play with each other because perhaps in the taxi or in the train in the morning, we would read it together. So we could overlap each other and be natural. And I think that came off quite well.
Having just finished breakfast, we could continue with the domestic scenes as a domestic scenes. And strangely enough, it worked very well as a contrast from the tough detective, you know, who was all a man of action, not necessarily in Bond style, but he moved things along very fast and wasted no time at Scotland Yard. And it was nice just to suddenly get a telephone call or iPhone. Janet West, my wife, in the series, and one suddenly had this lovely thing about talking about children's problems and things like that. Yes, well, do your best, darling, and call you later. Bye-bye for now.
How did they go about creating the roles for radio?
I think that one is cast for one's voice and attitude, frankly.
Yes, yes.
Really?
Yeah.
So you present yourself, and hopefully that's what they want.
Yep. I mean, I don't think he wrote a Crane type of character. I never read the book, so I don't know. But we created, because that's what people wanted, was it was a tougher chap, you know, because you've got these outrageous characters like Corrosion. You know, similar to the Bond today, exactly the same sort of adventure. I don't know how it would hold up today. I think it would still, because they are adventures, adventure series. And I think you don't recreate the character. You add what you can. But basically, the spine of the character is what was written.
Rosie, you've got to get out of here, both of you, double quick.
Billy, what are you talking about?
Well, it's no time to talk. Now, come on, out and down the stairs. Oh, hurry, Rosie.
Leave go of me. I told you not to touch me.
They've all gone, the lot of them. I went with them till I found out what that bastard of a blower had done. I got away from him in the dark, in that cemetery, and then came back to the sewer. Now, downstairs. You too, Mrs. West.
Yes,
now, come on.
Well, what has he done?
He's set a load of delicate night, that's what he's done. Ready to blow the place, to lay that confused. Send you and Rosie in the copper sky high. They're out there in the street, with your husband.
But Roger, that's right.
So go on. You and Rosie, get out to him. Get out that front door and make it fast.
But what about you? Where are you going?
I'm getting out the same way I came.
Oh, Billy.
I've got to keep away from the copper, so for Christ's sake, get away.
Come on, Rosie.
Watch out! Right, man, come on, follow me.
No,
come on.
Keep back. Stay back, there's a bomb. Quickly, Rosie, come on.
Jan, love.
Roger, there's a bomb in that house. It'll go in minutes.
Right.
Right, everybody away as far as you can. Now, at the double. Jan, Rosie, come on, come on.
Quick, run in, thank you,
Sarah Lawson not only played Janet, she also provided the scream for another actress, John Fawcett Wilson.
Some actors, actresses are good at certain things. Some have weaknesses. And I remember not all actresses can scream on cue. And I remember Sarah sort of volunteering. I think we had an actress, it was in the one that the Corrosion's in. We were having trouble. She couldn't scream. It was as simple as that. It would have to be an ear-splitting scream. And Sarah said, well, I don't mind. I can scream a little bit. And I remember we were recording this one in the studio and broadcasting house, which had two rows of curtains. Because when she screamed the first time, it practically blew the transmitter. We sort of put her between the two curtains and said, just a little bit further back, please, Sarah, and screamed again, and the same thing happened. In the end, she was at the far end of the studio, standing between these two curtains, screaming her head off, and we said, right, thank you, goodbye.
I did have a very good line in screaming. I was very good at it.
I never hear it at home, by the way.
No, well, it's time. Yeah. Yet, yes, I was very good at screaming, but I can't scream now. Not anymore.
Mm-hmm. The series was recorded in mono, long before the modern advances in wireless technology.
I suppose, really, we used to record in a little studio under the store that used to be Simpsons on Piccadilly. There was a little BBC drama studio down there. And we had a day and a half to do the recordings. First day was a rehearsal day, the second half day was basically for notes, a run through, and then the recording. You had to book a line from that studio to broadcasting house to a recording channel, and from 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock. And so you had to be ready and go. It was in some ways simpler. I think, I just used to like the mono recording, because if you were playing a scene with someone, you were standing across the mics at each other, so you were able to pick it up. But stereo, of course, you're tending to stand side by side. I know one or two actors who used to learn the first line of their cue so that they could see the actual facial reaction of the previous line from the actor so they could pick it up. Effects, of course, were all on disc, no tape. I thought effects were important in a piece like this. I was very much a novice in drama. But I always thought sort of the effects were important, and I think they were. Now, I always used to start the day, well, I think most people do, start the day with a read-through. And most people sort of sit around and read through the script. I've always actually read through on microphone. And certainly in mono, it made life very much simpler, because I used to record sometimes, if there were no effects in a scene, it was nice to record it, because you've got a spontaneity, you know, that you either have to get the sort of total spontaneity, or the rehearsed spontaneity that comes after about a day and a half of rehearsal or something like that.
How does Creasy fan Norman Wright rate the radio serials?
Well, the Inspector West radio series was splendidly done, Maurice Travers' dramatisations were sharply written and very well balanced, and John Fawcett Wilson, who produced the early series, kept the action going all the time but never neglected the other facets, West's family life that made the novel so successful. And of course, using Patrick Allen to play the lead role was an inspired bit of casting. He has such a wonderful voice, such a vocal range, that he's totally believable as the successful Scotland Yard man, yet at the same time could get all of the other elements, tension, worry, sometimes fear even, into his delivery. And Sarah Lawson was totally believable as Janet West. I think it would be very difficult to find a better pair of actors to play the roles.
John Creasy died in 1973, and almost none of his books are still in print. But in The Toff, The Baron, Commander Gideon and Chief Inspector West, he created a quartet of characters who will live as long as there's an audience which can appreciate top-class detective fiction.
Well, Sergeant?
That was the last of the divisional headquarters, sir. Superintendent Goff.
What did you get from him? The same story?
Same story. How about you, sir?
I've made half a dozen calls, and there's not much room for doubt, Hubert. What Pearlie Willis told me was right. Not that I've ever known him wrong. Pearl of great wisdom, you might say. Hold the fort, Sergeant. I'm taking all this to Chatworth.
Roger, are you absolutely certain of this?
Yes, sir. It all adds up. Sergeant Gills checked with all the divisions. I've talked to the police in six major cities. Manchester, Birmingham, Glasgow, Liverpool, Hull, Cardiff.
And they confirm Pearlie Willis's information?
They do, sir. There's no question of it. The villains are converging on London from all over the country. Deviators, tea leaves and tearaways. From the top boys like the Cotters down to the small-time mug Charlies. They've been coming in since early this morning, and they're still coming.
And the red discs?
The place is flooded with them, according to Pearlie. This is it, sir. It's got to be. The build-up for Corrosion's £10 million caper. And now we know what it is. It can't be anything else. A full-scale Huns, Goths and Vandals operation, modern style. Sack, pillage and plunder. The target? London.
You've been listening to Patrick Allen and Sarah Lawson in part six of Battle for Inspector West by John Creasy. Listen to Mastermind at Midnight, the final episode of John Fawcett Wilson's production of Battle for Inspector West.
Professor Geoffrey Richards was presenting the last in the series of Radio Detectives. The producer was Liz Anstey.